Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. What I'd like to do, during this purport, there are several Sanskrit mantras which I've asked Saurabh to help me out with. So he'll chant those, but I'd like to him to come up here at that time, if that's okay, to chant those mantras. Okay. Translation. O Lord Girisha, since the impersonal Brahman effulgence is transcendental to the material modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, the various directors of this material world certainly cannot appreciate it or even know where it is. It is not understandable even to Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, or the King of Heaven, Mahendra. Purport. The Brahma Jyoti is actually the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Brahma Samhita 5:40. Yasya prava pravo jagatanda kuti kuti sasesa vasudhati vibhuti binam tad brahma nishkalam anantam ashesa bhutam govindam adipushyam tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is endowed with great power. The glowing effulgence of His transcendental form is the impersonal Brahman, which is absolute, complete, and unlimited, and which displays varieties of countless planets with their different opulences in millions and millions of universes. Although the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth is an expansion of the rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He does not need to take care of the impersonalists who enter into the Brahma Jyoti. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mayatatam idam sarvam jagatavyakta murtina. In my impersonal feature, I pervade this entire universe. Thus, the avyakta murti, the impersonal feature, is certainly an expansion of Krishna's energies. My avadis prefer to merge into the Brahman effulgence. They worship Lord Shiva. The mantras referred to in this text 29 are called the Mukhani Pancho Panishadas, Tavesha. These mantras are as follows.
Thank you. Okay. I'll just go through all.
Okay. One, Tat Purushaya Vidmahe Shantayai. Number two, Mahadevaya Dhimahi Vidyayai. Three, Tanno Rudra Pratishthayai. Four, Prachodayat Dhrityai. Five, Agorebhyastama. Six, Atha Gorebhyo Moha. Seven, Agorebhyo Raksha. Eight, Aghora Tarebhyo Nidra. 9. Sarvebhya Sarva Vyadhyai. 10. Sarva Sarvebhyo Mrityavai. 11. Namastestu Kshudha. 12. Rudra Rupebhyas Trishna. 13. Vamadevaya Raja. 14. Jeshthaya Swaha. 15. Sheshthaya Ratyai. 16. Rudraya Kalyanyai. 17. Kalaya Kama. 18. Kala Vikaranaya Sandhinyai. 19. Bala Vikaranaya Kriya. 20, Balaya Vridhyai, 21, Balachhaya, 22, Paramathanaya Dhatrai, 23, Sarvabhuta Dhamanaya Brahmanyai, 24, Manashoshinyai, 25, Unmanaya Jvara, 26, Sadyojatam Prapadyami Siddhyai, 27, Sadyojataya Vai Nama Ridhyai, 28, Bhavedityai, 29, Abhave Lakshmiai, 30, Natibhave Medha, 31, Bhajasvamam Kantiai, 32, Bhavasvadha, 33, Udbhavaya Prabha, 34, Ishana Sarva Vidyanam Shashinyai, 35, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Abhayada, 36, Brahmadhipatir, Brahmanodhipatir, Brahman Brahmeshthada, 37, Shivome Astu Marichyai, Marichyai, 38, Sada Shiva Jvalinyai. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. The impersonal Brahman is unknown even to the other directors of the material creation, including Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, and even Lord Vishnu. This does not mean, however, that Lord Vishnu is not omniscient. Lord Vishnu is omniscient. But he does not need to understand what is going on in his all-pervading expansion. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that although everything is in expansion of him, mayam tatam idam sarvam, he does not need to take care of everything, nachaham tishva asvastita, since there are various directors like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Indra. Om Adhyanatim Arandhasya Jananjana Salakeya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmei Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Taitanya Manopistam Sitahapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Datati Savapadantikam Vancha kalpatrupiyascha kripa sindupiyevacha patitanam pavanabheyo vaishnavabheyo namo namaha. And just one more prayer, begging for the mercy not only from my spiritual master and these previous acharyas, but the actual Bhagavatam itself. This is from the Padma Purana. Samsara sagre magnam dinamam kuruniti karma grihaya kritangham mamudava bhava mava. I have fallen into the ocean of repeated birth and death, and I am totally distressed. My karma is like crocodiles ready to bite me. O ocean of mercy, please pick me up from the ocean of material existence. Srimad Bhagavatakya Yoyam Prachaksha Krishna Evahi Savrikrito Shimayanata Murtayam Bhavasagare. This Srimad Bhagavatam is actually Krishna himself. O my Lord, to get release from this cycle of birth and death, I have taken shelter at your lotus feet. Manavratti madayayo yam sabhala savatavaya nirvagya nevya kartavyam dashaham tava keshava. My dear Keshava, I am your servant. Please fulfill this desire of mine in serving you through the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it occurs to me in reading through this chapter that how can we even understand this Srimad Bhagavatam without our Acharya, Srila Prabhupada? You know, it starts with prayers that appear like they're worshipping Lord Shiva as the Supreme. But Prabhupada explains in his purport that actually this worship of Lord Shiva with these prayers that seem to address the Supreme Lord himself are actually addressing the person who is using or manipulating the material energy that's from the Lord. In other words, that this person is a representative, a director, as referred to in the purport here. It refers to directors, and they're under his control. He says the modes of material, everything is under his control, but they're given the responsibility. So he does not really need to know what is happening. So these prayers are, in a sense, respecting Lord Shiva's position as a director of the material energy under the Supreme Director, who has this special control over everything. So they're sort of like via mediums, like Lord Brahma was used for creation. He was given the mantras for creation. They're just used by Lord Krishna in some way, as we all are actually in our devotional service, in some way to assist the Lord in devotional service in this material existence. So very interesting sort of aspect. And there's no way, from my point of view, I could have understood this from just reading the translations, that we're not addressing Lord Shiva as the Supreme, and so, but others would. But what is even more interesting coming from this is how the demigods and the demons had formed this truce. And now, this churning of an ocean has caused this poison to appear, to manifest, which is threatening their very existence. And so, somehow or other, including Lord Vishnu, is or the Supreme Lord, he's also joining in and requesting Lord Shiva to help them. It's so the Supreme Lord is joining in with the demigods, and they're addressing Lord Shiva. They're addressing Lord Shiva out of this great respect for what his position is and what he can do. So the Lord engages us in our service too. He gives us some service, and if we can understand that we're given this service by the Supreme Lord under his direction, actually, that he's trying to engage us in his service as he does all the demigods, then it gives us maybe a little bit of impetus to know that actually, though we're not Lord Shiva, though sometimes we may think we are, or somebody, or like Lord Indra, he thinks he's the Supreme sometimes, that actually it is important to the Lord that he's engaging us. He wants us to serve him. You know, much like I was listening to Bhakti Tirtha Swami lecture, and also Gaur Govinda Swami, where they were talking about deity worship. And the deity is a very merciful form, very special form, in that it engages our services and treats the Lord as a helpless person, that we have to dress him, we have to look after him, we care for him, we feed him, that we can show our affection, much as all these, you know, Mother Yashoda, the Nandan Maharaj, and all these other gopis, and how they're all treating Krishna in a very, very personal and intimate way. It's, and so we've been entrusted with this deity worship. And it was really pointed out by both Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj and also Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj. Neglect. Be careful of neglect. If we get used to whatever service we have, there can be neglect, treating it as something mundane, like a job. Because if we do that, offenses come. And this will really impair our spiritual life. So this service that we have, whether it be with deities or whatever service it may be, it's important to know that we can have an offensive attitude, because Krishna reciprocates with us in our mood. If we're not interested, he's not interested. We have to have this particular attention to note what we're doing in whatever we do in terms of service. And it's very worthwhile to note this, that these two acharyas, you know, these two great souls, were pointing out this, that actually nothing should be done with neglect. It should be done with attention, mindfulness. Because not only does the service improve, or the quality of the service improves, that also it endears the Lord to us. He reciprocates from within. He will enthuse us. And Prabhupada, he's got this nice expression. He says, for those who are decorating the deities or cleaning the temple, they too become decorated and they too become cleansed. Because this is the reciprocation. It's not that we seek it, but our intention is that if we can get this motive to please him, is the best. Because this will give us attention. Because, you know, I take people in married life, actually. It's a nice example. Shishi Radha Gokul Nanda, Shishi Gaur Nitai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. That those in married life, if either of the partners start to be neglectful of their relationship with each other, then we can start to find that one of the partners may sort of let them know in some way or other. Certainly, this is the whole thing about loving relationship. Krishna lets you know. If you're doing offensive service, you'll lose taste, you'll be angry, these sort of things. You lose interest, actually, and it will get worse and worse and worse. You know, so it's something to understand. This reciprocation takes service away from us. You know, it takes everything away from us. Gradually, and it'll feel okay to us, because we'll be given the mentality to accept it ourselves. This is the danger. That we'll think it's okay. That we're doing okay. This is the something to be aware of. Because Krishna, he says, for those who worship the demigods, I give them this power to worship the enthusiasm to which they identify themselves. Likewise, in whatever we do ourselves, if we identify with enthusiasm the service of the Lord, and whatever we do, we just give it our full attention. We may not feel like it, but we should. Prabhupada says, if you don't feel enthusiastic, just be enthusiastic. We actually have to practice enthusiasm. We actually have to give ourselves this enthusiasm. Even some people will say, oh, it's artificial. But it's not if you're practicing bhakti yogi, vaidhi bhakti. It's the whole purpose. We have to practice. If we don't want to do something, we still should do it. We have to somehow find something within ourselves which is over and above our like and dislike, which are the dualities, the modes of nature. We have to transcend that. we have to say, look, somehow or other, I've got to please Krishna, I've been given this. But somehow, we've got to use the intelligence as well. What's happening? What is happening? And this means contemplation. Why am I not wanting to do something? Is it because I can't do it? Or is it because I don't want to do it? Because if I don't want to do it, that'll give us the mentality that I can't do it. That'll be given that as a reciprocation. And we'll make so many reasons. But somebody who's given a service spontaneously, and they say, "Phew, this is from Krishna, I must do it." Somehow or other, nothing is by chance. If we can understand whatever we're being given, we should take it as best we can, then we should address it and say, this is from Krishna. There are some times when you're actually clashing with a service and you've got like a dilemma. I can remember this used to happen quite a lot in this early part of my service here. And it was always a very difficult decision. It tore me apart, actually. You know, because you see, you know, everything's coming from Krishna. Your duties are coming from Krishna. But also this spontaneous thing that appears also comes from Krishna. So somehow or other, it's a dilemma that only we can resolve within ourselves and understand after, by some contemplation, that this was a chance given to me, or that yes, I should have carried on my duty. It's not just a random thing. It is something coming that's a test of my duty. That am I fixed in my duty? Like for me, I remember, especially when Brahman initiated, you know, theoretically, this gives you an opportunity, and actually not theoretically, but it gives you an opportunity if you wish to do deity worship. And I remember I've been approached several times on this. And it's always been a dilemma. But I knew that from my point of view, if I don't do what I do nicely, how can I do something, the thing, which would then cause offence? I always felt strongly that to stick with what I've been given, and if somebody says, oh, why don't you try this, why don't you try that, why don't you try this? There's so many things we can try. Because the mortal material nature wants something different all the time. But I remember Gaur Govinda Swami was asked by his disciple, why don't you start to do purports to these Goswami's literatures? And he says, oh, Baba, Prabhupada's given me more than enough for this lifetime and the next lifetime and the next lifetime and the next time. We can do so many things that people suggest. So really we have to understand what is our level of incompetence. In other words, do we lose our competence by trying so many things? Forget things, some things. You know, we just become neglectful if we're not too careful, because we're trying so many things. It can become nonsense. So there are many ways of viewing it, but it's a personal contemplation. You should understand that unless we contemplate our service to some degree, that we have to know our level of incompetence or our level of competence, what is good for us. But there's one thing I wanted to pick up from this last, the verse before this. It talks about impersonal Brahma Jyoti here, impersonalism. I'm really bringing it a bit away from that, because in a sense, this impersonal worship is there for those who want to get away from suffering, but suffering, this sort of getting away from suffering means going into like solitary confinement, where you exist no longer as a person, that there is just eternity, the nature of eternity. There's no bliss, there's some knowledge. but it's suffering. It's another form of suffering because it's not the nature of the soul to be in the impersonal Brahmajyoti, not active, not serving. The nature of the soul is to serve. So in principle, that's there for the Vaishnav. Service is what Krishna wants from us. But in this previous verse, 430, it says, all the Vedic literatures which are full of verses are emanations from you because their compilers wrote the various scriptures under receiving your glance. Now, this glance of Krishna, it's talked about in this previous part of this chapter, how things were accomplished by his glance. By the glance of Krishna, the modes of material nature were given, increased in Lord Brahma, and the modes of passion and in Vishnu goodness, and in the serpent, I've forgotten his name now, but the serpent was given the mode of ignorance. They were increased for this service of churning the ocean. So the modes of nature can be utilized by Krishna that are within us for service. Because Prabhupada, he did this. He knew, he showed by example how the modes of nature can be used when he engaged his disciples in certain tasks. And they became empowered within their natural ability to do their service. So this merciful glance is a special thing. It's just Krishna, he glanced over the material nature, impregnated the souls into this amazing Mahatattva. The power of his glance. And so I'm going to, this is Prabhupada's last chapter, of which he talked about in its text 50. And he talks about his merciful glance and smile, which is an amazing purport. Prabhupada's on his last few moments in this world in doing this chapter. And the brilliance of this purport and this text is just showing Prabhupada, it shows his transcendence. They talk about Shakti of Aish avatars here. They were describing how that Shiva, Brahma, Vishnu, they're sort of Shakti of Aish avatars. In other words, they're not the original supreme, though Lord Vishnu is Vishnu Tattva, but they're called Shakti of Aish. So Prabhupada, sort of justifying his Shakti of Aish powers in extreme deterioration of the material body, he speaks this rather beautiful verse. I'll just do the translation and purport. This is Canto 10, Chapter 13, Text 50, for those who are listening elsewhere. Those Vishnu forms, by their pure smiling, which resembled the increasing light of the moon, and by the sidelong glances of their reddish eyes, created and protected the desires of their own devotees, as if by the modes of passion and goodness. Now, this is the cowherd boys. They've shown their Vishnu forms, And those Vishnu forms, by their smiling, it resembled the increasing light of the moon, and their sidelong glances and reddish eyes created and protected the desires of their own devotees. And there is with a capital T, because they're Vishnu forms, these cowherd boys. They're expansions of the Lord himself, as if by the modes of passion and goodness. it seems that these smiles and sidelong glances were in the mode of passion and goodness, maybe. But here, Prabhupada explains, those Vishnu forms bless the devotees with their clear glances and smiles, which resembled increasingly full light of the moon. Shreya Karasya Chandrika Vitaranam. As maintainers, they glanced upon their devotees, embracing them and protecting them by smiling. Now, when these little cowherd boys were mixing with the devotees of Vrindavan, their attraction and love, loving propensity towards them increased. So it says, they glanced upon their devotees, embracing them and protecting them by smiling. Their smiles resembled the mode of goodness, protecting all the desires of the devotees. And the glancing of their eyes resembled the mode of passion. Actually, in this verse, the word raja means not passion, but affection. In the material world, rajaguna is passion, but in the spiritual world, it is affection. In the material world, affection is contaminated by rajaguna and tamaguna. But in Shraddha Sattva, the affection that maintains the devotees is transcendental. So this is very interesting. So there's a rajas in the spiritual world, which is not in passion. It's not selfish. It's totally affectionate to the supreme object of affection. And then it says the word svakartanam refers to great desires. As mentioned in this verse, the glance of Lord Vishnu creates desires of the devotees. A pure devotee, however, has no desires. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami comments that because the desires of the devotees whose attention is fixed on Krishna have already been fulfilled, the Lord's sidelong glances create variegated desires in relation to Krishna and devotional service. In the material world, desire is a project of rajaguna and tamaguna, but desire in the spiritual world gives rise to a variety of everlasting transcendental service. So this desire is to, how can I serve Krishna? What way can I serve? What will please him? So this glance enthuses the devotees in such a way that they'll be given understanding on how to serve Krishna in such a way that'll please them. It's transcendental. So we can see in this world how Prabhupada had this merciful glance. He had not only the merciful glance of the Lord himself, how he should do his mission, but also he passed it on to his devotees as well. And this is how it's done through disciplic succession, that when we get to the transcendental nature, the smile of the spiritual master or our gurus or the pure devotees, the sadhus, the enthusiasts, they give us inspiration. They give us understanding on what we should do. We feel enthused. There's a reciprocation. They're identifying with the soul within the body. They're addressing the soul within the body. They're not addressing the modes of material nature at all. So it says in Vrindavan, there is a place where there was no temple, but devotee desired. Let there be temple and seva, devotional service. Therefore, what was once an empty corner has now become a place of pilgrimage. Such are the desires of a devotee. Now we can see what happened in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram temple, was an empty corner. Let there be service. Let there be worship. Let there be a temple. Srila Prabhupada ki. So, this is the merciful glance of the Lord. And we can see in devotees in our own lives here, we're getting the merciful glance. Because they're enthused. And we should go to these people and ask them what we can do for them, how we can serve them, how we can please them. What should we do in our service elsewhere? Seek their guidance, because they'll help us. Because they got the taste, they've been given this merciful glance. So, I'll just finish there. Okay. Is that it? Any comments, questions? It's just one other thing. I've forgotten your spiritual name now, sorry? Nashodan. Yashodan. Oh yes, Yashodan. Now, Yashodan Prabhu, they've had association with, I'm terrible at names, the great Kirtan, 24 Kirtan. Ayendra Prabhu. Now, you see, how persons are enthused in service. Ayendra Prabhu had this special, totally unique, such a special talent. And sometimes controversial, but this is his uniqueness. This is his special talent. You know, sometimes you see people with special talent and somehow there's always controversy. You know, are they doing right? You know, Gaura Govinda Swami was the same. Somehow there was controversy. They were such powerful devotees. But we should understand that this special quality that these devotees had, really they passed on to others in such a way that it transformed the lives of so many people. And likewise, our spiritual masters are helping us in transforming our lives, elevating us the whole time. So it's just, you know, it just occurred to me, you know, how people change. They mature. They actually grow up in devotional service from being sort of, you know, we're in it for a good time, but they change. They become mature. They start to become really wanting to improve their service, whatever they've got. And that's the sign of maturity, that actually whatever they're doing, they want to make better in service of the Lord. They try and improve their service. And this is a sure sign of getting the merciful glance of the Lord. And that's, so whatever you've got, we can improve it. And this is the way of getting this higher taste. You know, whatever it may be, whatever you do in terms of devotional service, you can improve it every day. Okay, I think that's it. So, it's gone time, but if there's any questions,